Welcome to the iLife.com weekly podcast. This is episode number... can we find out what episode number it is? What episode number is it? Is it 4, 5, 3?
I think this is the 4th, but I'll check again. I'm loading up this page.
This happens a lot around here.
Yeah, number 4. This is 5.
Are we sure?
I'm sure.
Okay, so... with that in mind, and with my iPhone out of sight. Okay. With that in mind, welcome to the iLife.com weekly podcast, episode number 5. It has been a while, but we're back, and hopefully with more regularity. We plan to make this a regular branch of the iLife.com, or of the iLife. And, really, we have to apologize for the 10-month or so delay. Wouldn't usually apologize for this, but it's been almost a year. But yeah, hopefully we are back. I'm Sydney San Martin.
And I'm Matt Dodd. And in this past 10 months, it's been an interesting time for lots of things. I'd say mostly for the iPhone. I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah, Apple's continuing to move forward. Since our last episode, we had WWDC, where they brought out Snow Leopard and showed us that the future of the Mac OS, at least the immediate future, is going to be a lot of small improvements in performance, major improvements in performance, instead of the huge set of new features that was Leopard. The App Store launched, and the iPhone is becoming Apple's next big thing, and in some ways is overtaking their computers in popularity, kind of like the iPod, but even more so. The App Store is launched, and development has thrived, and the hack store that Cydia and Installer are still thriving, letting people get applications on that Apple just doesn't approve of. And now we're almost time for Macworld 09.
Yeah, it's definitely been an interesting time, particularly for the iPhone, but just in general. I mean, this is stuff that the last time we were recording, no one even really thought about, because in March there was the SDK announcement, but there's obviously no show recorded since then. So
a lot has changed. And at that time there were, I don't know how many, 4 or 5 applications total that had been written in the SDK. And even those were pretty impressive, but I think, I can't say that no one expected the kind of success that the App Store has had, because everyone did expect it, but it has, it's really lived up to its expectations.
Yeah.
Right. And there have been just an amazing number of both free and paid downloads from the App Store, and a huge amount of development. And that's actually one thing that I saw at WWDC, even before it launched, that a huge percentage of the developers there, I think, at least half, more than half, were completely new to the platform. And they were just there to learn about iPhone and to learn about the development that they would be able to do for it.
Yep.
And there were people there, not only independent developers, but from large companies that were sent, or that begged and pleaded and eventually managed to get a ticket to San Francisco to see what the iPhone can do for their company, and how they can build little applications for the iPhone that'll tie into whatever services they already offer.
Yeah.
It's hard to see how the iPhone will pan out, of course, as a platform, 5-10 years down the line. But at the moment, everyone is excited about it.
Yeah. So. And, since then, both of us are registered iPhone developers, and we can actually talk about that now that the NDA is gone.
Yeah, which was pretty major change, because before that time, iPhone developers weren't even really allowed to talk to each other about what they were working on, or help each other with problems getting their apps to build and programming problems. And Apple is trying to create a much more friendly environment for developers to talk to each other with the launch of a new private set of forums, much like the Apple discussions, so with kind of a new a new design. Maybe they'll be rolling that out to the discussions in the future, but a new design and just the mission of giving iPhone developers a place to talk about their work,
yep.
which is wonderful compared to what was going on before.
Right. Yeah. I wish I had more time to develop an application. I'm sure you feel the same way.
Yeah, I feel this very much the same way.
But
I have a day job right now as a Mac consultant, which is wonderful.
Right.
It's wonderful, but doesn't leave much time for app development.
Yep.
And you're up there.
I'm a college student, so I've got other things such as studying and sleeping to be done. And
yeah.
Forewarning, I am recording this from my dorm room, so things could get rather unpredictable and there could be some noise interference, just forewarning. But
yeah,
anyways,
we're far apart and we're trying to record this in some, using some little creative methods. But I'm using my shockingly non-3G iPhone to record this, and that may result in some occasional GSM noises, little buzzing noises in the background. I'm trying to minimize that, but
yeah,
it might slip through. Anyway.
Right. Anyway, so moving into today, since we're talking about the past, there's a lot of talk about the new 2.2 version of the firmware for the iPhone OS.
What's going on with that? I have not had much time to... I've seen a couple of features, some little updates to, like Maps and Safari, but what's going on with that?
Right. Basically, it's still under development, so only the beta iPhone developer people can access it. But there have been a number of things leaked.
So technically us, but you know.
Right. But technically we're not supposed to disclose them. There have been a number of things leaked on the internet, however. It depends what you view is the most important, but there's a lot of changes to the Maps application. They're adding Street View, apparently, walking directions, transit times.
Which walking directions are really deserve to come to the iPhone because, there have been countless times that I know I've, and probably everyone else has used it to try to find their way to a destination, and they're nowhere near a car. You're just
right.
Pulling your iPhone out of your pocket to get a map,
yeah,
and getting some advice along the way from the good folks at Google would be much appreciated.
Yep. Let's see. I'm trying to think of a number of other things. There is some changes into the. The podcasts and over the air podcast download.
Oh really?
Yes, I believe it's through the iTunes application where you can download songs and stuff. And there's going to be a tab for podcasts. This I don't believe it's been completely confirmed because it's been going off of this one image that has. Listing of podcasts in the iPod, and then it says get more episodes ... and it looks like it's blue, so it looks like you can click on it and download more episodes over the air. Another thing they're adding to the SDK is the line and sound access for like the new iPod Touch has the third pin for audio in through the headphone jack.
Now, is that going to be different from accessing the microphone or the headset microphone on an iPhone as you've done in the past?
I'm not sure how that works. I believe, because there's different versions of the firmware for different devices, so I'm assuming that it allows audio into the iPod Touch, because I know that's existing on the iPhone already. I'm not sure of the specifics behind that. I can't really say. There is the sharing location was also added to the maps, so you can like send someone a location. Let's say you have a restaurant pulled up and you can click, either add to contacts, add to bookmarks, or share location to show to a friend.
Will that end up using email?
I believe so, yeah.
Will it compose an email for the link to them?
Right, right.
Okay. I know you're probably pulling this out of nowhere. Can you share your own location? That's what I want to see.
I don't think so.
Huh. Okay.
I don't know if it works for current. I'm not sure though.
Well, plenty of the apps in the App Store to take care of that one.
Yeah. But yeah, so I mean, those are a number of them. So it's a fairly big change, specifically for the Maps application, but otherwise, just in general, it's a fairly big OS release. And that's been building for a while now, since after the September announcements. So I'm assuming that with this number of features being added, and certainly keeps growing, we're probably going to have to end up waiting to Macworld to see this stuff. So.
And by the way, sorry to cut in, but this is not bringing any information to light that wasn't already known, but I was doing some looking around, and there have been several more screenshots posted of podcasts in the App Store, or sorry, in the iTunes Store.
Ah, okay.
And as far as the rumors go, it follows the same conventions as the App Store, where you can only download things 10 megabytes and under over the air. Mm. And anything else, yeah, you can switch over to Wi-Fi and download whatever podcasts you want. And they're, at least as far as these screenshots show, it exactly like anything else in the iTunes Store, except the price is marked as free. So that's a good thing.
Yeah. There has been actually a couple of other rumblings, not necessarily related to 2.2, but the AT&T CEO, I believe, or some major exec, was quoted saying that there is an iPhone tethering solution that is coming soon. And this corroborates with an email that someone got from Steve Jobs back in like September, August or something, that said that, you know, it was ridiculous that you pay for a data plan and you have this iPhone that's capable of doing so many things, yet you can't tether to a computer, I guess, without either jailbreaking or using, if you have the opportunity, to buy NetShare. But that happened last week. There hasn't been any kind of screenshots or association with 2.2, but certainly that if that's the truth, then that should be in the works as well. It was not the CEO of AT&T. It was a chief executive of AT&T Mobility. But
okay, fair enough.
Yeah.
I mean, but you have to wonder, how they're going to make that work.
Right.
How the logistics of that are going to work, because as far as tethering goes, even right now, there's so many different ways that phones are tethered. There's tethering over USB, tethering over Bluetooth, which is one of the more common ones, and then the method of tethering that people have used on the iPhone, which is tethering over Wi-Fi, creating an ad hoc network. And I don't know, you know, which one of those is the most Apple-like.
Yeah, who knows?
Little iffy.
But anyway, so that's certainly in the runnings. And finally, if anyone remembers this from WWDC, the push notifications, which were supposed to come out in September. There has been very little announcements, none official from Apple regarding this matter.
And that they were promised in September. That it was
correct.
Not a tentative release date. That was
yes.
When they were going to go live for everyone.
Right.
And even in the first release of the iPhone SDK, right? It included all of the functionality to implement push notifications.
Well, not the first one. It was the first. It was the first after WWDC. After that announcement, they did indeed seed developers with push notification APIs and all the hooks and documentation regarding it. Actually, I'm sorry, that was after the 2.0 release. So there's all the betas up until the 2.0 release, and then after that, the 2.1 releases had push notifications, and then after the fourth build of that of those betas for 2.1, they disappeared, and Apple made one comment that said, has been removed for, I don't even know what they said. There's some just one sentence that was quite small, and it said, I'm trying to pull this up here, it said, quote, the push notification service
being held for further development.
Yeah. So
yeah.
Since then, there's been absolutely no official word on it, and September has passed, and it's not in the 2.2 betas as far as the internet is concerned. And
you have to wonder where, I mean, what the delay is, because when you think about it from a technical standpoint, it sounds very simple.
Right.
That, you know, that it works exactly the same way as very similarly to push email. You know, your application's server run by you sends a notification to Apple, and Apple sends a notification to AT&T, and AT&T sends it to your phone.
Right.
I mean, but something must have gone wrong. And, you know, maybe when they started testing it on a larger scale, they realized that certain aspects of it couldn't scale. Maybe they had a problem integrating with AT&T. Who knows?
Well, did it go through AT&T? I believe it was just Apple servers, and then the iPhone would hold an open connection to an Apple server, and then that Apple server would push to the iPhone.
Yeah, okay, you're right there. You're absolutely right.
I don't think AT&T had anything to do with it, but I could be wrong, and certainly no one really knows at this point what the deal is. I think that was what the concept was.
That is indeed what they announced.
But
and I was there, so I should have known that as well.
But either way, I mean, that's definitely another large feature, and it's kind of unfortunate that it's going the ways of this mysterious state of development. No one really knows what's going on. So hopefully we'll be able to hear more about that soon.
At Macworld.
Macworld, perhaps. It'd be nice to see release then, but it looks like at this point it's not going to happen if the developers don't have their hands on it.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Whatever happens with that, hopefully it's for the better. I mean, certainly if you look at the 2.0 release, it was slightly buggy, and you know, 2.1 certainly resolved lots of bugs. And
oh yeah, backing up was absolutely hellish with 2.0 and 2.0.2.
So I mean, if it's being pulled for a reason like that, then it is for the better. But it would be nice to hear about it since it was promised for September. So, anyway, so moving into to Macworld 09, it is only the beginning of November, but it is fast approaching upon us, and
it's worth starting to speculate now, because Apple has confirmed that the current hardware lineup is their holiday lineup. We know that what Apple's going into the holidays with is also, we know that Apple's current product lineup is what they will be going into Macworld with.
Right.
So we can speculate, very easily, based on that.
Yep, that opens the doors for the rumors to start pouring in. But so yeah, I mean, with the new MacBook set and the new iPod set, that only leaves and the new Cinema Display Singular. That only really leaves the iMac, the Mac Mini, the Mac Pro, the desktops, which have, particularly the Mac Mini, been left in the dark in terms of updates. I believe it hasn't been updated officially in like a year. I don't even know at this point. A long time. So, I mean, there's been a lot of speculation regarding if it's going to be discontinued, but it seems that rumors are saying it's still going. The development cycle is still...
The Mac Mini, you mean?
Yes. Development cycle is still going on, and apparently there are some revisions in store for the future, according to rumor sources. So, who knows what we could see. I mean, perhaps it might move to an aluminum enclosure to match everything else that is aluminum now. But we'll never really know.
Yeah, and it's hard to say, because, I mean, how much more minimal can it get? I mean, it is a box that you have, where you have plenty of ports on the back, and it's amazingly compact for a desktop computer.
Yeah, and it's...
You can refresh the specs, you can add new ports, like DisplayPort.
Yeah.
Which we'll probably be talking about in a minute, and you can change the enclosure, so they have to do at least a couple of those things.
Right. And,
yeah.
Same with the iMac and the Mac Pro as well. I mean, it seems that they're moving towards this new display port. And
yeah, so let's talk about that. What's up with display port?
Well, on all the new laptops, they're using a mini display port, which is actually a substandard, I believe, of display port. It's not like the proprietary mini VGA or mini DVI that were once used on MacBooks and iBooks.
Though that doesn't necessarily mean it'll be any better supported. But
yes, that's true. But it is actually a standard, unlike those which were proprietary to Apple. So yeah, I mean, DisplayPort itself is a newer. I guess it's
what's a successor to DVI,
right? Yeah. It offers a number of improvements on DVI. The one thing that's concerning, though, is that since it's not a full DisplayPort, you have to get, you know, these little converters and cables and adapters to get to whatever you're trying to go to. So, like, I know the mini DisplayPort to DisplayPort, I believe, requires a expensive adapter versus, like, the $19, you know, DisplayPort to VGA or to DVI.
Well, I mean, you would hope that if it's a similar standard, that you'll start to be able to get really, you know, cheap cables in the near future once companies start to use it more.
Right.
Because as far as I know, it is exactly the same standard, so you just need a cable with the pins wired correctly, right?
Well,
Yeah.
I mean, you would hope it become more adapted and therefore better for everyone in the long run. But you want to be careful of it becoming this essentially proprietary thing to just Apple laptops, which just makes it more of a headache in the long run. I mean, certainly, you know, the full DVI port on the MacBook Pros were certainly a very nice feature to have in a lot of respects. So I don't know how you view it, but some people view it as not necessarily the best choice that could have been made. But, you know, who really knows?
Yeah, I mean, well, you can see one of the reasons that they one of the reasons that they use mini DisplayPort, and you can see this if you look at a picture of the MacBooks and MacBook Pros disassembled, is that they keep making the logic boards smaller and smaller. That they're showing off the MacBook Air's logic board at Macworld, and how thin and, you know, how pencil, that it was pencil size, and the same thing is starting to happen on the MacBooks and MacBook Pros, that there is literally no more room along that side of the logic board for any ports. There's no question that if a few years down the line, DisplayPort powered displays are going to become a lot more common, and all the people who bought MacBooks and MacBook Pros now will be very happy if they have it. But there's some problems now, but it's not something that's going to be a problem down the line at all. And it's kind of one of Apple's necessary sacrifices on these things, unlike FireWire, which there's been a significantly more disagreement on Apple's decision to remove that from the MacBooks.
Yeah. I mean, like you said, there wasn't much room left in the logic board, but perhaps there could have been some implementation of the, you know, don't remember the spec on it. I will look that up. But the FireWire...
The new FireWire, what is it, 1600?
Well, yeah, I mean, that would have been nice, but if, you know, they don't have any room left, then they couldn't have added the port. However, on the MacBooks, which don't have any FireWire port, there is a FireWire, it's called S800T, which allows FireWire to be used over Ethernet.
Oh, really?
Through an Ethernet connector.
That's very interesting. Is that something that can be done in software, though? Could Apple release a software update in the future that will allow these MacBooks to use FireWire S800T?
I don't know if it's... I'm not familiar enough with it to know. It may have to have a certain chipset or I don't know if it's completely software, but I believe a lot of it is. I can't really say.
Oh, okay. For sure. So never mind. Yeah, I'm seeing now that as of October, Wikipedia, as of October, there are no 2008. There are no products or chipsets which include this capability.
Great. Okay.
Yeah.
Oh well, fair enough. Yeah, because I mean, it's kind of sad if you don't mind talking about this a little bit now about FireWire. Some people say that you can accomplish everything that you used to be able to with FireWire with USB and Ethernet and all the other ports that are on these computers. But FireWire was really, you might agree with me, Matt. It was just a really great standard, all in all. You had that tree architecture. There's another word like that. Whatever, it'll come to me. Topography. There you go. The topography where you can. It's not a tree topography where you can have devices connecting to each other in any kind of a pattern, and they will all be able to find each other. And almost every FireWire device out there had one or two other FireWire ports on it. And it could be a FireWire 400 port, a FireWire 800 port, and everything just worked together. So you can set up your whole, you can fill your whole desk with devices without any hubs at all. And it stayed fast the whole way. And there's another difference between FireWire and USB that, USB takes a significant amount of CPU power to do transfers. I mean, it's not significant. It's not so significant these days. But FireWire, on the other hand, all the transfers were done in the FireWire chipset itself. That takes up space on the logic board, but it lets it be a much more steady flow of data, you know, where the data is just going straight from the device through the chipset and to wherever it's going. And it ends up that FireWire you get on FireWire 400 versus USB, FireWire wins out in terms of raw speed, even though USB is technically faster. A big loss with getting rid of FireWire is target disk mode, which is absolutely wonderful and which has been around since the days of SCSI. That wonderful feature of being able to take any Mac, functional or not, and hold it, start it up holding down the T key, connect it to another Mac, and have access to that Mac's hard drive. And you could install the Mac OS on it, you could run disk utilities, run diagnostics over FireWire, and as far as I can tell, there's absolutely nothing that can replace that right now other than buying yourself a hard drive dock, a SATA hard drive dock, and pulling out the hard drive every time you want, if you ever have a problem, if you ever want to do that. And at my workplace, we use target disk mode a lot. I mean, we have plenty of hard drive docks around, but we use target disk mode a lot for just quickly getting into a computer and pulling data off of it or putting data onto it.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, all in all, just superior hardware. And it, unfortunately didn't catch on as much as USB, didn't become as cheap, wasn't as readily available. But, it's interesting is that a lot of PC manufacturers, both on the motherboards and the laptops and like logic boards and stuff have FireWire 800. I'm sorry, have FireWire, not 800. 800's even worse than FireWire is. Generally, laptops will have like I believe it's B FireWire B. The 1394 standard with just four pins versus the larger 6-pin connector. It's kind of interesting that the people who helped pioneer this technology and the people who helped put it into the mainstream by putting it into computers are now taken away as other people seem to have just generally accepted it, although it's never as popular as USB.
Yeah.
Hopefully it stays around enough to not completely die out, but who knows?
I mean, in terms of external hard drives, until USB 3 comes out, which I don't know how fast that's going to be. Let's see, USB 3, 600 megabits. Oh, sorry, that's megabytes a second. Oh, 4.8 gigabits. Until that comes out, there's not going to be, for pros, a faster method of connecting to data storage, to hard drives, than FireWire 800. So you gotta at
least... and actually, the third iteration of FireWire is out. It was not out, but it's been ratified as a standard by the 1394 Association, Trade Association, by the IEEE, or whatever. Yeah. And it's supposedly going to be available on devices soon, and that promises speeds up to 1.6 and up to 3.2 gigabits a second.
Right. Still not technically as fast as USB, right? So, which is a little...
What? No, USB 2?
USB 3, with the 4.8 gigabits.
Yes,
but,
yeah. That's true. But...
Yeah, so
if it's superiorly designed hardware and USB is still inferiorly designed, I mean, it may not make the difference. But even so, if this is out before USB, that could help, because USB 3, I know, is still in fairly early development stages. It's nothing's been ratified and seems to just be going on still. So I mean, if that makes it on to the market before USB with enough times, it could end up being a big boost for FireWire. But
because it'll be backward compatible with FireWire 400, with FireWire 800 and FireWire 400, it'll be much easier for people, pros, because many pros have two or three hard drives on their desk, to just throw on a FireWire 1600. Drive at the beginning of the chain and call it a day, and I'm sure they will. Also, probably because FireWire is familiar. So we have to we have to believe that Apple's going to keep FireWire around on the pro side for at least another 3 years, 5 years.
Yeah, who really knows? But yeah, I mean, they've definitely bought themselves, if they don't change the design of the laptops, another 2 years at least, until they decide to redesign majorly the exterior, not just the interior of the computer, the internals.
And then, not to stay on FireWire for too long, but I'm going to really miss FireWire, right. So I have to put a few give it its few minutes of fame here at the end of the road. For cameras, anyone with a mini DV camcorder has, which is most people these days. Well, maybe not anymore, but has had the experience of connecting their camcorder to their computer and loading up iMovie or Final Cut and transferring their video over, and knowing that it's transferring completely digitally, and knowing that they will still be able to have the tapes and archive them, store them wherever they want. And with FireWire going away, there's going to be absolutely no way to get video off of all these mini DV tapes until someone comes out with a USB, for MacBook owners, until someone comes out with a USB mini DV deck. And who's going to want to buy that? Because everyone already has their camcorder and they're already used to using those to.
Well, it was someone actually pointed this out to another letter to Steve Jobs email, and the response was, which is true, that most newer cameras have both FireWire and USB 2.
Yeah. Can you use USB 2 to transfer from the tape?
Yes.
Okay.
So, I mean, yes, what you're talking about is definitely relevant in older and cheaper cameras, where FireWire 400 is the predominant standard. However, with these newer cameras, they are using both USB and FireWire, or in some cases, just USB. So,
okay, that's a good point. And also... I also heard from that David Pogue, the New York Times technology writer, actually personally asked Steve Jobs. He had the opportunity to about that specific issue, and Steve Jobs told him, basically, wake up. I don't have the quote in front of me. I can find it, but basically, he said, wake up, tape is dead. Steve Jobs personally killed off, has personally declared the end of tape, and he says that if you're buying a camcorder now, you're gonna have the option between a pure digital camcorder with a hard drive or with a memory card of some sort, or you're gonna have the option of a tape. And most people are going to go for one with a memory card or a hard drive, And
yeah.
that in itself obsoletes FireWire, because you're just going to be able to plug the thing into, put the thing in a card reader, or plug it in and mount it as a disc or something, and get your video off that way. So it's, you know, another case of Steve Jobs forcing Apple to step ahead of the times by a couple of years and drag everyone else along with them.
Right. Yeah. So anyways, in terms of Macworld 09, doesn't seem like there's a huge lineup of rumors, but definitely there is some holes to be filled. So we should look to see some change in that for sure. And certainly as it gets closer, we will probably learn more and get to a maybe better prediction. But, you know, certainly coming very fast. And before we know it, it'll be December, and then we will find ourselves trying to get to Macworld. I don't know what Sydney.
I've been talking about it at work, because some other people from my company may also be trying to go to Macworld, and we're going to come to that decision pretty soon. I've been getting the emails from IDG saying, hey, we're giving you coupons. Are you sure? Are you sure you don't want to go now? Here's a priority code for you. So, I don't know, I have to do that.
Yeah. And I would like to go. I mean, I'll be on winter break, so I'm going to do my best to try and get out there. I think the biggest roadblock in my way is the plane ticket.
Hmm. Yeah.
But
so here, yeah, we'll so let you know. So that we can make fun of ourselves in a few months when this after Macworld, what do we think our major predictions are, our sure things for Macworld 09.
Something about the Mac, and it's not going to have to do with the laptops, for sure. I don't think there's going to be any talk about laptops, since that was covered a couple weeks ago in the 16th of October event,
okay.
The notebook. So it's going to be something about Macs, the desktops, and perhaps some rumblings of the iPhone and 2.2, or perhaps status update on the push notifications.
Okay. Yeah, that would be wonderful.
yeah, I mean, very general prediction.
Here, but... Snow Leopard. Snow Leopard was announced at WWDC, and I don't know, I mean, a lot of people are saying that Snow Leopard is going to be released at or around Macworld. I don't know about that. Maybe.
Yeah,
but that's better. I mean, like they did with Leopard a little while back, have a big presentation of all the new things in Snow Leopard, because they didn't. I mean, they said absolutely nothing about it publicly. I mean, there were presentations about Snow Leopard at WWDC, but everything was under NDA.
Well, there was a press release that went out about it.
Okay,
some. I don't remember what it said, but there is some information also on Apple's website about it.
Okay.
So it's not completely under the NDA yet, or still, but I think there was one build that came out a week or two ago.
Correct. Yeah, the first one.
Yeah. So I mean, it doesn't look like development's at a rampant process like it would before an OS release. So it's definitely not Macworld. As far as I know, the slated release date is like spring 2009. I would totally not be surprised if they got pushed back to like fall of 2009, and then after that maybe winter or like they like to say early 2010.
Yeah, Apple needs to work on the whoever picks their deadlines, because
it's better to say
we're not releasing that for another 2 years, and then say hey, we're you know, half a year early, than to say we're releasing it in, you know, in a few months and then be half a year late.
Right. Yeah, it gets disappointing. But we will see. That maybe will be talked about as well.
Great to see a lot more details about Snow Leopard brought out into the light, so people know what to look forward to at least.
Yeah, definitely.
All right.
But
do we want to call any hope for any refreshes of other products like the Mini and like the Mac Pro? Or the iMac?
I would say definitely for the Mini. The Mini and the iMac. The Mac Pro, I think, got a speed bump this past spring.
Fair enough.
So That's before the 2000. I mean, I don't know. It's hard to call, but
because yeah, I mean
some
the...
kind of desktop, and hopefully it's the Mini because the Mini is the longest due for both the hardware and a design refresh.
Right, and absolutely. I mean, I think we complained about this 10 months ago in our last episode. There's still no way for Pro, you know, for people with a Mac Pro. To or Mac Mini for that matter, to have an iSight unless they got by, you know, a camera, as has been, as Apple is doing so much with on all the other computers, except by buying an iSight on eBay.
Well, this the new Cinema Display
they do, but the new Cinema Display is only compatible with DisplayPort, right?
And Mini DisplayPort at that, which is that's the strange thing. If they put Mini DisplayPort on the desktops, the desktops other than the iMac or maybe the Mac Mini. I mean, if the Mac Pro has only DisplayPort, that brings up a number of serious questions because that limits you just to their display unless you get one of these adapters.
You mean, wait, it limits you to only DisplayPort displays, you mean?
Right, unless you get an adapter.
Yeah, I suppose so. But I mean...
It limits you to only Mini DisplayPort displays. Like, so you can't just get a DisplayPort display because you're still going to need the adapter in between. And the only Mini DisplayPort display there is at all is the Cinema Display.
Okay. But, I mean, they've got to be cheap. Like, I mean, like, you know, you can get an HDMI to DVI cable for almost nothing these days. You've got to, I mean, I'd be shocked if Mini DisplayPort to regular DisplayPort cables aren't going to start coming out and costing, well, if you buy it from Monster, a lot, but costing almost nothing. I mean, that would be... I mean, it's got to happen.
Uh-huh. Yep, well, we will see.
Yeah,
hopefully.
That's speculation.
Hopefully the right choices are made, but you never know. Anyways, though, so I guess that's just about it for this episode. I mean...
All right.
There was some rumbling about Sony BMG allowing iTunes to drop the DRM and add another studio to the iTunes Plus, which would definitely be a great improvement, seeing as Amazon is really beginning to rival iTunes with the direct, you know, the MP3 downloads with no DRM for 99 cents.
Yeah, I mean,
an album.
I mean, I've pretty much stopped buying music from iTunes, honestly, because Amazon's usually cheaper. They have MP3s. Nothing on the store has DRM. You know, things that on the Apple Store you can only get in regular iTunes, not iTunes Plus, with DRM. They have it without DRM. And yeah. I mean, most people aren't going to be concerned about this. Amazon.com's files aren't watermarked. If any file you download, like if you buy a song with iTunes Plus from the iTunes Store and share it with a friend, God forbid, that file is permanently watermarked with your account information. And that's just kind of a little bit creepy. But I guess this is not an Apple versus iTunes podcast, but yeah, they need to step up a little bit if they want to compete with some of the things that Amazon's bringing out.
Right. They don't want to make negative strides in their market share and revenue and all those kind of things, so they have to be careful about losing ground versus gaining because they have a huge, huge domination in currently. So, yeah. Anyways, that's just about it for Macworld, and that's just about it for the show. So, I mean, if you have any questions or comments or concerns or something, feel free to email us. Matt. M-A-T-T at theilife.com. It's T-H-E-I-L-I-F-E, all one word, .com.
Maybe a friend gave it to you. Anyway, I am Sydney, S-I-D-N-E-Y, not S-Y-D-N-E-Y, at theilife.com. And I have an iPhone, so I'm probably going to get your email pretty quickly. Yeah, we both have iPhones.
Yep, certainly we'll get back to you. And hopefully we will record another one in a week.
Yeah. And of course theilife.com is not just a podcast. It's barely a podcast. We have, you know, check out our blog post, comment.
Yep.
Tw- tweet at us. We are on Twitter at The iLife.
Or you can instant message us at The iLife. No spaces. That is our screen name.
Yeah.
So, yeah, for this fifth
episode, this is Sydney San Martin.
And I'm Matt Dodd. See you again.
Good night, everyone.